Tonight, two sharks in hot water, Kevin O'Leary and Kevin Harrington, sued for fraud by 20 people. Did the Shark Tank stars knowingly participate in a scam, or were they themselves victims too? One of the people suing joins us live. And then a strange true crime story just went off the charts. A fatal boat crash, a double murder, a drive-by shooting, and now accusations of embezzlement. What is really behind the Murdoch family murders? And finally, it's being compared to the Scarlet Letter era, where sentencing is swift and due process non-existent. Adam Carolla on the new form of puritanism, better known as cancel culture. Welcome to Banfield, everyone. What started out as a report of a fatal boat crash has now ballooned into one of the most baffling and elaborate murder mysteries. Over the weekend, Alex Murdoch, a prominent South Carolina lawyer, was shot in the head while changing a tire, he said. It was just a superficial wound, and he did survive. The attempt on Murdoch's life was just the latest in bizarre events involving the entire Murdoch family. Here's what else has happened to them. February 2019, the family is thrust into the spotlight when Alex's youngest son, Paul, allegedly got drunk and was involved in a fatal boat crash. Paul was charged. Then, while awaiting trial, he and his mother were brutally gunned down, dead on their property. Authorities have not said if these incidents were linked to this weekend's attack on Alex Murdoch, the dad. However, Alex Murdoch has since resigned from his law firm and checked into a rehab facility for drug dependence, he says. The same law firm that now says Alex Murdoch was stealing money from them and that they're investigating it. Tonight, we're going to break it all down for you. Every last twist, including this most recent one. But first, another shocking legal case. Two Shark Tank stars have been sued for fraud. Kevin O'Leary, a.k.a. Mr. Wonderful, and Kevin Harrington, also a star of Shark Tank, both of them accused of participating in an alleged crowdfunding scam that defrauded wannabe entrepreneurs out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. 20 people have signed on to a class action suit, but the lawyer representing the plaintiff says the number of alleged victims could be in the hundreds, maybe even thousands. I'm joined by one of the plaintiffs, Jennifer Moody, and her attorney, Trey Lovell. Thank you to both of you. Jennifer, let me start with you. What happened in your case that led you to be a part of this lawsuit?
Well, in 2019, I had a great idea, decided I would like to try and start a business. And I actually had done some research and found that there are marketing companies out there that'll help you crowdfund your business. So I did a little research, checked them out, and I discovered InventureX. When I did find them, I actually found that Kevin Harrington was actually partnered with InventureX at the time. So that was a really big kind of motivating thing for me to see that somebody so prominent was actually partnered with this company. After further research, I also found that Kevin O'Leary was also endorsing this company, and that was also kind of furthering my confidence in this company's capabilities, along with their success rates and all the other things they had promoting this company. So after meeting with the individuals and learning more about the partnership along with the company with Kevin Harrington, I decided that I would sign with this company and see if I was able to get crowdfunded and hopefully start my business. After a little bit of time, I actually noticed that they were not being quite as responsive or cooperative, and I started to notice that they were actually kind of minimizing their delays and eventually just kept putting me off more and more, to the point where I had to figure out what was really going on. So after about a year of waiting, I decided to post some reviews, and I found out that there are actually other victims out there who had the same experience as I did.
So I want to read a couple of statements from the two people who are among those who are being sued. First, I want to read what Kevin O'Leary's attorney has said publicly about this. He said, "It appears that someone has been using my name and likeness without my knowledge, permission, or consent. I've never heard of any of these purported companies and have never conducted business with any of the plaintiffs who filed this suit." And then for Kevin Harrington's part, his attorney released this statement. It says, "It has come to our attention that Kevin Harrington has been accused of various false allegations regarding a recent lawsuit. Kevin has been a proponent of entrepreneurs globally. Kevin never had any business arrangement or contract with any of the plaintiffs. This should be a dispute between the plaintiffs and AdventureX. Kevin simply did a video for this company." And to that end, I want to play a video that we have tracked down. I think, Trey, that you mentioned this in the lawsuit. And although the video doesn't come from the lawsuit itself, we found another YouTube user named Paul Roberts who posted that he claims he's a victim. And he said, here's the video Kevin Harrington sent him. He says it's a personalized video to entice him to become a part of this InventureX group. So have a look.
"Hey, it's Kevin Harrington here. Mark just told me about your product, and I think it sounds awesome. Let me tell you this. I'm in, and I think our team at InventureX can help you do a major crowdfunding launch, not only to prove the concept, but to raise some significant funding. Now, after we crowdfund this thing, you and me are going to have to sit down, going to have to talk about how we can really take this product to the next level. Hope you're okay with that. Well, but first, let's get your crowdfunding launch going. I told the team, find a spot, put together a game plan, and let's partner up. I'm ready to do this. Money loves speed. I look forward to working together. Look forward to talking to you soon."
So, Trey Lavelle, is that the same video that your client Jennifer received?
Yes, it is.
So I'm curious about it because he never addresses anybody personally, but someone's written the graphic across the bottom to make it look personal. And I suppose the natural question out of that would be, what proof do you have that either of the Kevins are actually connected in a fiduciary way, officers of the company or something that actually puts them in the know of any kind of alleged fraud?
Well, I mean, that's what the litigation's about, and that's what we're about to venture into. But what's clear is that the marketing with InventureX, which included the website, which included brochures, other materials, all depicted Mr. Harrington as a partner, as a significant part of it. All the clients got the video, which he himself is making personal promises, tying himself to InventureX. And the conveyance to the clients was this, oh, my God, he must be involved. He must be a partner, just like the marketing saying, just like the video I'm getting. And so our question is going to be, you know, under what circumstances was that video made? You know, Mr. Harrington is making personal representations. He knows that he's doing that because of the words he's saying. We assume that he knows it's going to be distributed, or at least should know it's going to be distributed to would-be customers of InventureX. And having known that, you know, what was his investigation and what's his involvement? You know, as I said, we're venturing into that right now. We don't want to. One thing we don't want to do is we want to litigate this in the press. We want to keep it in the court system. There's going to be significant discovery, depositions, things like that. But based on what the clients saw and received and the image they got, they all believed that Mr. Herring was significantly involved, and that's the reason they wanted to join up.
What I do find sort of almost comical is looking at some of the material in the lawsuit shows that people who were presented as executives in some of these companies had these smiling photographs, like someone named Matt Green and Greg Sheffield and somebody named James, and they had titles like head crowdfunding strategist and director of new ideas and ads manager. But if you look closely, their pictures were actually Shutterstock. You could just buy those. It's very odd that it would be that simple just to go to Shutterstock and see the image on the right. You can just buy it and then isolate that dude and then call him Greg and then call this person Robin and call somebody else Matt. it just seems amazing that it was this easy to find. I mean, it certainly looks like evidence of some cheating. The only thing I'm still not 100% clear on is pitchmen. I mean, pitchmen are a dime a dozen. I hate to be so crass about it, but my gosh, I can't watch cable news without seeing, well, let's see, Tom Selleck, who's pitching reverse mortgages. Ice-T is pitching Car Shield. Jimmy Walker, he's pitching Medicare Helpline. Joan Namath, he's pitching Medicare coverage. And I could go on and on, like Joan London and Robert Wagner and Sally Fields and, you know, but there's nothing that suggests they're nothing more than just pitchmen. It doesn't mean that they know fraud, and it doesn't necessarily mean they know that the guy that's hiring them is going to cheat them. Are you concerned about that, Trey, that you might not have any standing?
Well, as I said, that's what the litigation is about. I mean, we have alleged a number of causes of action from against Mr. Harrington, from fraud and negligence to false advertising. And we're going to get to the heart of it. You know, what we know is what we've done pre-litigation, the due diligence and what the clients have seen and what the representations have been. And once we get into it, we'll find out exactly what level that he's at. But I think you make an interesting point, Ashley. I mean, in terms of celebrity endorsements, like you say with Tom Selleck and stuff, I mean, the reason that they're using celebrities is because of the power of persuasion, the credibility they have. And when people hear somebody like Tom Selleck, endorsing something, they assume that he at least is a personal fan of it. He has qualified it. They reach the level of his to get his endorsement because he wouldn't want to embarrass himself by having something that's nefarious. So I think most people assume there's some due diligence done, and that's what we want to get to the heart here. You know, if you think about the abuse that celebrity endorsers can have. I mean, if a celebrity's not qualifying something, somebody in endorsement, doing their due diligence, they could be endorsing a criminal syndicate. They could be endorsing, you know, a child abduction ring. I mean, there has to be
certainly affect their brand. That's for sure. I think you're right, though, about the litigation. That's something still to be determined. Hey, Trey Lovell and Jennifer Moody, thank you both. I hope you're going to come back and keep us updated on how the case goes. I hope you will. Promise.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. I now want to bring in attorney Mark O'Mara, who's one of the smartest lawyers I know. It seems you never have a question that I have a question you can't answer. But I'm super curious about this one because I sort of feel like caveat emptor is part of the way we go about life. Like, I don't know that I think Tom Selleck knows everything there is to know about reverse mortgage, right? That's on me. So what protection do these two Kevins have for what might have actually been a scam? I don't know that to be true. It's an allegation. But if it is, what's their exposure?
So their exposure might be there if they had some information or they failed to look into information enough to protect themselves. And I'll give you an example. We know what fraud is. It's an intentional misrepresentation of a material fact that's relied upon by somebody else to their detriment. So that's how we define fraud. Now, what did they do? If they gave out this video and they got paid $10,000, $100,000 to do this video to Adventure and they did that knowing that it was going to be distributed, then I think they do bear some responsibility. It is an uphill battle to try and show that this company does seem to have been defrauding these potential entrepreneurs with stock photos and whatnot. But I will tell you, these two Shark Tank members may have a little bit of risk here. It sort of harkens me back to the Trump University days where Trump was up there saying what he was going to say, right? And all of a sudden, it was this sort of misrepresentation of who he was and his level of involvement. And that, you may recall, was a $25 million settlement.
So, but that one was super clear. It was Trump University and he was Trump and he was doing the pitching. So everybody knew that he, you know, was a part of that company. But let me tell you, like Mr. Wonderful, we don't have the video from him, but I've got some of the transcript according to the lawsuit of what Kevin O'Leary says in his video representations allegedly. And it's Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank here. And I wanted to talk a little bit about InventureX and really congratulate Mark that would be one of the executives, for helping over 50 entrepreneurs and ideas this year using crowdfunding. Look, everybody knows crowdfunding is the new frontier in entrepreneurship, and it's a fantastic way to get you going. You need help to do it? Mark's your man. And it goes on a little bit more by saying he's helped, you know, all these companies, and then he gets cute. But what I'm super interested in with that is Mark O'Meara, not the Mark from the company. When you say something like, Mark's your man, how is that any different than, like, I'm a New York Jets fan, like, go Jets, go. We are going to win. I'm not a part of that team. I just want to be considered the cheerleader. How is he considered different than a cheerleader?
Here's the difference. If I tell you, Ashley, I'm a lawyer, I'm an expert in what I do, and I want you to use these lawyers, then there's this suggestion that I'm within my area of expertise, and I'm telling you, these people with my background and my area of expertise, I'm not Tom Selleck selling reverse mortgages. Everyone knows Tom Selleck never sold a reverse mortgage in his life. But if they're saying we are investors, we fund entrepreneurs, and these are the people who I want you to use, that's the strength of the connection that may lead to some fraud or an allegation of fraud, because what they're doing is they're using their very reputation within the sphere, the universe that they live in, to tell other people to do it. It's not, you know, these different people, again, like Tom Selleck. This is somebody right down the path of what they do on TV every week, telling other people to use the people that they want them to use.
That is super interesting. The closer you get to being the expert, the more you might really consider the people that, you know, you take a paycheck from to endorse. Okay, Mark O'Meara, don't go anywhere, because I have a whole bunch more questions for you on this totally bizarre development this weekend. It's the truth about Alex Murdoch. Mark's going to join us in a minute, because Alex Murdoch, his wife and son, you'll remember, were gunned down on their property in June. And then this weekend, Alex was shot in the head, but he survived, and it's superficial. Now, accusations he'd been stealing from his law firm, and boom, he resigned. And boom, he says, I'm going to rehab. I've got lots of issues. Is this all just, you know, a bunch of coincidences, or is this something more sinister? We got the latest next. Welcome back to Banfield. Shocking developments in the Murdoch family murders. And that is saying a lot, because this is the case that never seems to end, and the twists keep coming. Over the weekend, Alex Murdoch, a prominent South Carolina lawyer, the father in this picture, what looked like a happy family, he was shot in the head while changing a tire, he said, on the side of the road. Turned out it was a superficial wound, and he survived that. But there are so many more questions now surrounding that attack. Days after he was shot, Mr. Murdoch announced that he was resigning from his law firm and entering rehab for drug dependency. All of these developments come just 3 months after his wife Maggie and son Paul were gunned down in cold blood on their hunting property. While Paul was facing a trial for his part in a 2019 fatal boat crash that took the life of 19-year-old Mallory Beach. Were these three cases connected, or does tragedy just follow this family? Criminal defense attorney Mark O'Meara is still with me to sort through this, and we're also joined by investigative reporter Andrew Davis. Okay, so Andrew, I'm going to turn to you for a moment just to sort of get some clarity on what I was just kind of gobsmacked about this weekend, hearing that Alex Murdoch had been shot in the head. I thought, well, clearly this has to be connected to the murder of his wife and son, but then he survived and he's resigning from his law firm, and the law firm is saying he's being investigated. They tell the New York Times for millions in embezzlement, and that it's serious, and that they've got an auditor. What exactly is happening?
I think that's what everybody wants to know right now, Ashley. I mean, where he was shot was just a couple miles from the property where his wife and son were killed. The question many people have is, he was driving a car that, would it really need its tire changed at that point? There's a lot of questions about that. They're about these people, man, woman, whatever they may be, one or more, that may have passed by as well. And if they shot, why didn't they stay to, quote unquote, finish the job or steal from him or something? What was the motive behind it? Then you have the law firm, who also quickly stepped aside from him and said, we do not accept this kind of activity in our own law firm. which, by the way, that law firm was founded by his great-great-grandfather more than 100 years ago. So you're understanding how much money we must be talking about and what a black mark it is on this agency, which is desperately trying to put their name back in the good side of the spotlight. No one really knows what's going on, but there are a lot of questions now surrounding Alec himself about what happened in that situation. There's questions about whether he truly was shot by someone else. I was out at that scene, and I'll tell you, there were a lot of showcasings there, a lot of investigators who really wanted to dig in and see whatever they could find. I'm not exactly sure what they were looking for, but I think a lot of it had to do with exactly what Alec Murdoch saw and whether he was truly behind what happened.
Okay, it's so much to take in. I just want to read a statement that Alex Murdoch released after, obviously, he was released from the hospital with the superficial shot to the head. He said, "The murders of my wife and son have caused an incredibly difficult time in my life. I have made a lot of decisions that I truly regret." That's interesting. "I'm resigning from my law firm and entering rehab after a long battle that has been exacerbated by these murders. I am immensely sorry to everyone I've hurt, including my family, friends, and colleagues. I ask for prayers as I rehabilitate myself and my relationships." Okay, Mark O'Mara, as a lawyer, I know that your spidey senses probably were tingling like crazy when Andrew Davis, bright and talented from WSAV, said, "Run flat tires." That Mercedes SUV, that GLS Sport SUV, had run flat tires. You could drive 50 miles on that, and he was only 7 miles from home, and yet he's changing a tire, multiple shell casings. He's on a road, apparently, that the locals wouldn't use to go where he was going. And also, he apparently gave all this description and detail about the truck going by, then turning back around and shooting him, but doesn't have any, we don't have any description of a truck. We don't have any description of an assailant. And then we got run flat tires. So Mark O'Mara, tell me about your spidey senses.
Well, the run flat tires was immediate. And let's not forget that those cars have black boxes. So law enforcement will get to that black box and find out, was there a flat tire? What was going on? So we're going to get a lot more information from the forensics side of this. But good Lord, I remember my mom when she would say, you know, "Oh, what a wicked web we weave when first we practice to deceive." I don't know what Alec is going through, but it is an enormous amount that we don't know the half of it yet. What happened with him with the superficial gunshot sounds to me as though it was planned as some diversion, whether it was himself maybe trying to kill himself, maybe not. You know, yet to be seen. But if you look at it from the outside, you're looking at somebody who's lost his son and wife. We don't know now how nefarious it all is going to be. Was someone trying to protect this Murdoch name to avoid the trial that was coming up with the son? There's just so much to unravel. I think we're barely halfway into this book, but there are a number of chapters yet to be read.
I think you're right. And I think someone in Hollywood is trying to get the rights to this because it really is so complicated. Hey, Andrew, one thing that stood out to, you know, everybody who works with me on this show was, wait a minute, Life Flight? Someone got a helicopter to Georgia to a hospital and it's a superficial head injury. He's out in a day and a half or two. Does any of that make sense? And has anybody in authority had to answer for that?
I'll tell you, I've asked a lot of questions so far of SLED, the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, about what people should think. I've got people asking me, why aren't we scared? Why isn't there some sense of a suspect out there? Or why don't you give us a description or even tell us we shouldn't be scared and here's why? And nobody's gotten that. The other question is the helicopter. If you get grazed in the head, why do you end up getting taken all the way to a hospital in Savannah and then immediately let out almost as quickly as you were let in, and be willing to talk on the cell phone to your brother, to your law partner, to multiple people? So clearly, it wasn't that bad. It's bringing up a lot of questions here among people to go, why is he getting this treatment, and what exactly is law enforcement trying to find, as well as what exactly is law enforcement, what is their connection to all this? And I know Mark could probably tell us more from a law firm point of view, but if they're willing to dissociate themselves so quickly from one of their own partners, you know, there has to be a lot of depth to exactly the information they have and how much money we're talking about.
So, Mark, really, like 10 seconds on this, but do you find that just insane that this happens. A story is released to the public that a truck went by and turned back around and shot someone in the head, multiple shell casings, but we don't know what the truck looks like, and we don't have a description of any new perpetrator. Do you think this really smells like a rat?
It is. It just, he's going to use his addiction, I think, as his excuse for most everything that he is now facing. One of the best moves, quite honestly, is to go to rehab when you don't have any other answer. I wish him well, but he has an enormous amount to answer for. None of that makes sense at the car. So I know we have to go, but no, it's a lot more to be talked about.
Sometimes I think when I yell at my kids, I should just say, oh, I'm sorry, I need to go to rehab. Maybe that'll clear me for having yelled at them. I mean, that sure is a very convenient thing to do these days. Story continues. Andrew Davis, excellent work. Thank you. And Mark O'Mara, as usual, you're like the first guy I turn to. Thank you.
Well.
Okay, everybody, I'm going to take a whole different tack here. The age of cancel culture is being compared to the 17th century mob mentality in The Scarlet Letter, where no one is safe, even from those committing the very same quote-unquote sins. But surprisingly, Adam Carolla says, don't blame the mob. Well, I had to ask him what he meant by that. And guess what? He's coming up right after the break. Do you ever wake up and think, thank God that I'm not living in Puritan times, you know, when witches were burned at the stake in America and justice was oftentimes just, you know, in the hands of the mob? Whew, lucky us. Might want to grab a stiff drink because there's a brand new essay in Atlantic Magazine. That's kind of a somewhat leftist-leaning publication. And it says the age of the new Puritans might just be upon us again. Comparing cancel culture to that mob in Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter. I want you to have a listen to this. Social codes are changing in many ways for the better, but for those whose behavior doesn't adapt fast enough to the new norms, judgment can be swift and merciless. Adam Carolla saw this social pandemic coming years ago when he and Dennis Prager made the documentary film No Safe Spaces. Take a look at this.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say will be used against you.
You are not listening.
I want your job to be taken from you.
A protest has turned violent at California, Berkeley.
This is why we're fighting for the soul of America.
You should be able to share ideas without fear of being fired from your job or shouted down.
Welcome back to the show, Adam Carolla. It's good to see you again. I thought of you as I spent like, I don't know, it takes me 2 hours to read a 25-page essay. But I wanted to drink in every word of it because I started to realize, holy moly, this is a leftist-leaning magazine, The Atlantic. And they really are depicting how liberals are getting it in the face. College professors, you know, people who are being tossed out for having thoughts or opinions or concepts or writing papers. And it really all of a sudden did feel like the age of summary justice, where you get a death penalty, you get a social death penalty with no due process. And that's just so un-American.
Well, you know, it's funny that the liberals are starting to police themselves a little bit. You can see it with Bill Maher when he's up there and he's talking about cancel culture. And now his audience is cheering when he's voicing his opposition to cancel culture. Where were all you idiots 10 minutes ago when this thing was running over America? My thing is, who's pushing this? Where's it coming from? Who's promulgating this? This is the left. This is the Democrats. And they've been applauding it for the last 10 years. And now it kind of got out of hand. And now they're like, whoa, pump the brakes. You guys should have been pumping the brakes 10 years ago.
Well, you could also say the same of some conservative groups, too. I mean, the Al Franken thing was that was pushed pretty heavily by conservatives who wanted to see him boosted for putting his hands, you know, in a sexually explicit kind of picture that I, you know, personally years ago we would have said was funny. And now it's not. The norms have changed.
Well, look, as far as politicians go, no one on the left cared about what Al Franken did, and no one on the right cared about what Al Franken did. That was just political posturing. The right wanted to use it as a bargaining chip. The left realizes with all the Me Too and Time's Up movements that if they didn't throw Al Franken out, then they would lose their street cred. So he just got, he became a victim of this. But that's political posturing. I get it. That's what both sides do. You know, nobody really cares what anyone does, but we do act like we care. And that's political. But this is not political. This is Hollywood. This is social media. This is folks at home. This is people on Twitter. This is the zeitgeist of the country. Politicians are going to do whatever they're going to do for political gain. I think we all accept that, whether we like it or not.
So talk to me a little bit about this notion. And I really like this theory that you are following, and that is that it isn't necessarily always the mob. Sometimes it's the apologists, those who just jump on the apology right away instead of sort of standing up for themselves or standing up for their employees. And I'm just thinking about Mike Richards, you know, from Jeopardy, who ABC said, out you go, oops, you know, and nobody stood up for him and said, you know, 7 years ago, he did some bad jokes, but he's a good man and we think he's good at his job. And the same thing happened to Chris Harrison, right, on The Bachelor. Boy, he got turfed out, too, just for, you know, supporting somebody who had been turfed out. So do you feel as though it's not just a mob issue? It's also people who are allowing the mob to do things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if ABC acted like an adult and had some spine or some dignity or some intestinal fortitude, they would have stepped up and said, this guy's been hosting the show for 20 years. He's a delight. None of your business. Turn the page. Moving on. It's the corporations that take these people and toss them immediately under the bus. Yeah, Chris Harrison did nothing and Mike Richards did next to nothing. And these feckless cowards at the network level wouldn't stand up. And by the way, they didn't even have to stand up. They could have just had no comment. The news cycle would have immediately turned to how Joe Rogan is taking ivermectin, and we would have turned the page and moved on in a 48-hour news cycle. They did not have to do anything.
So I'm going to talk to you about Joe Rogan after the break and the ivermectin thing, because he said some stuff on a podcast today that was really interesting. I think he said, well, I got to sue CNN. And I'm sure he was joking, but it's interesting to see why he said it. I don't want to let this go right away, though, because I still think it's fascinating that we have this circumstance where people are just terrified, right? They're terrified to stand up and say something about someone they love. And one of the things in this New Puritan, the New Puritans piece that I read, I thought was fascinating. They said they break people into three categories. The first one is the heroes. They say very small number. They insist on due process before damaging another person's life, and they stick by their friends. Then the second group of people are the villains. And the villains think that you should immediately lose your livelihood as soon as the allegation's made. Some old friends, some people you thought were old friends, even join in on the public attack and never give you any due process. And then the third category, this is the really interesting one, Adam. The third category is called the good but useless. And this is the one that worries me. They don't necessarily think the worst of you, and they would like you to get due process, but, you know, they haven't looked into it. They have reasons to think charitably of you, but maybe they got too busy to help or they have too much to lose. And that sounds like those who look the other way because they're just afraid that the mob's going to come for them. Do you think you put those companies into that basket?
Well, the third group you mentioned should be aptly titled cowards, because those are the cowards. Those are the people who just stand by and they go, thank God it's not me, so I'm not going to stick my neck out and I'm not going to get involved with this. So it's really the coward. So there's one small group that is pushing this. There's a smaller group that is fighting for their lives. And then there's the general overall populace who are just have turned into cowards, and they just sort of step back and they don't want to get involved. Sort of basically like a crowd around an old woman who's being mugged on the street. It's just like, I don't agree with old women being mugged, but I don't want to get punched or stuck with a knife. I'm not getting involved. And that's essentially what's going on. It's not like there's a majority of Americans.
I will say that if someone has a knife or a gun, the police tell you not to because you could die. So there is that connection there, too. People are really worried that they could.
A fist fight.
Okay. All right. Stay with me. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, your buddy Joe Rogan had a very interesting holiday weekend, and I want to hear your thoughts on some of it. Take a look.
Bro, do I have to sue CNN?
I know. Do you?
They're making shit up. They keep saying I'm taking horse dewormer. I literally got it from a doctor. They must know that that's a lie.
Adam Carolla is in the podcast business with The Adam Carolla Show. He's also a frequent guest on his buddy Joe Rogan's podcast as well. Rogan had an eventful last week announcing that he had contracted COVID. Take a look.
I got up in the morning, got tested, and turns out I got COVID. So we immediately threw the kitchen sink at it. All kinds of meds, monoclonal antibodies, ivermectin, Z-Pak, prednisone, everything.
But he didn't mention the ivermectin. And Adam Carolla, he did mention it today that he took it and he's mad at CNN for being mad at him for taking ivermectin because the FDA is saying, don't, whatever you do, take ivermectin for COVID. And they're not just calling it the horse deworming thing. They're saying the ivermectin for humans. Don't take it. What do you think about Joe and his, you know, immense influence on people when he says things like, don't, you know, the vaccination's not that important for you. And I'm taking ivermectin for COVID.
Well, I would say this because I can hear Dr. Drew's words ringing in my head. What Joe Rogan does is between him and his doctor. It's not for CNN to weigh in on. If he believes, consulting his doctor, that this is the best course for him, then that's what he's allowed to do. I know it's not a world that CNN enjoys where individuals get to make their own decisions about what they do, but that's how we constructed this society. So Joe's a smart guy. Joe has all the information. He has more money than God. He has the best help and the best minds in his corner. And he decided with his doctor that this is the regimen he wanted to be on. I don't even know why this is a story. CNN lied.
You know what? I'll tell you what.
They keep calling it a horse medication.
Yeah, I think you're right to say that people should consult their doctors and those decisions should be private between them and their doctors. But then when they go on a public platform and espouse these things, then it becomes a public story because a lot of people follow them and do what they do. And I think you even tweeted at one point, get the vaccine, even if you had COVID, listen to the science. I mean, that's powerful. When you tweet something like that, people listen. And Joe Rogan said other things like, if you're young and healthy, you don't necessarily need it. And I took ivermectin. So I think that's the issue.
Well, if you're young and healthy, you don't need the vaccine. They're not couching this right. It's for old people and people that are morbidly obese and people with pre-existing conditions. It doesn't affect young people. Joe Rogan is correct. He did his research. It's not affecting young people. And if you're healthy and you're young, then you don't need it.
But if the FDA says otherwise, who are we? I'm not a doctor. I wouldn't say that.
Well, you would consult with your doctor, and then.
But I wouldn't announce on this show. But I wouldn't announce on this show. If you're young, you don't need it. I worry about the young people who are on ventilators.
All right. How many times have you turned on the news and had them tell you to get the vaccine?
How many times have I? Sorry, someone was just talking to me in my ear. How many times have I turned on the news and what happened?
And had anyone on the news tell you to get vaccinated?
Lots.
Okay, that's their opinion. This is Joe Rogan's opinion. They have a large audience. Well,
FDA. I think they're saying it's the FDA's opinion. That's the only difference, right?
Yeah, but the FDA has changed their story on this a million times. I mean, we're going to have to continue to get boosters and vaccinations. It looks like natural immunity is the best way to get past this thing. And if you've had it, for instance, the FDA said you must get vaccinated whether you've been infected with COVID or not. Well, if you've been infected with COVID, then you're 10 or 13 or 20 times more resilient to it. And it turns out you probably don't need a vaccination if you were infected with COVID previously. So why is the FDA telling you to get vaccinated if you formerly had COVID? Maybe the FDA
so much more. You know, there's so much more for us. Will you come back on the show? I always love having you on.
I'd
love
to come back.
Adam Carolla. Great to talk to you. Thank you for that. This discussion's definitely not over, but we're just out of time on this one. By the way, check out his book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. I love that. Okay, so coming up after the break, wow, this really shocking news. What happened to Michael K. Williams? Incredibly talented, 54 years old, an actor, beloved, found dead in his New York apartment. We've got a full report next. Actor Michael K. Williams, best known for his role as Omar Little on HBO's The Wire, was found dead in his New York City apartment yesterday. He was 54 years old. Joining us to shed some light on all of this is entertainment reporter Grace Randolph. Grace, what do we know about this? He certainly seemed in the prime of his life.
Definitely. He had his fifth Emmy nomination coming up for Lovecraft Country. Hopefully he'll win posthumously. We don't know too much. We're still waiting on an autopsy report, but he was found in his apartment, and the police say that it looks like it was indeed a drug overdose.
And so to that end, drug paraphernalia found near the body. It's a story I remember hearing Heath Ledger, a story similar to that. But he just seemed to me to have it all together, that this was something in his past. Was there anything to indicate that he was struggling?
Well, he's always been very open about addiction being something you can never totally get rid of. And I think his openness about it is one of the things that made him such a fan favorite. But I think it's also important to remember that there's a pandemic still going on. And a lot of people, you know, are very isolated, both physically and mentally. And so reach out to people that you know and see how they're doing.
Yeah. Grace, thanks for telling us. It's just so sad. And I'm with you. I hope he wins posthumously, too. He's a fan favorite. He's a great actor. And this is just a real tragedy. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Ashley.
And thank you, everyone, as well, for joining us. We hope you come right back here tomorrow evening for our Wednesday edition of Banfield. Lots to cover. And don't forget, a special edition covering the 9/11 20th anniversary coming up later this week as well. We'll see you tomorrow.